Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary
with Rod Oram this morning. Kia ora, Rod. How are you?
Kia ora, Rachel. Very well, thank you.
It's good to hear from you again this week. We're going to touch a little bit on some topics we talked about last week. Let's start with the bill that was passed with urgency yesterday, a Russia sanctions bill, unanimously voted on in Parliament. Now, what are, I guess, what's the purpose of taking sanctions against Russia, and what's the, I guess, long-term goal to achieve through this?
The main purpose of sanctions is to try to curtail access to international markets for goods or to finance and trade, to try to have an economic impact on the Russian economy. And that's this level of sanctions around the world is actually very, very unusual. It's very high. They were a bit slow getting going in the first sort of 72 hours of the invasion. Once the global community got behind Ukraine, mm-hmm. bar one or two countries, some really significant sanctions have kicked in. However, we didn't have a sanction mechanism in New Zealand separate from the United Nations. So we could sign up to a United Nations one, but because Russia has a permanent seat on the Security Council, it has a veto over such things, so the UN can't do that. So it's been left to individual governments, so we had to rush through Parliament legislation. And I'd have to say the sanctions that we've come up with so far are pretty weak, and we really need to step up and get as aggressive as the best of the countries are doing.
Now, what would you like to see if we're not doing enough at the moment? What should we be doing?
There needs to be a much longer list of individuals who need to be targeted, the oligarchs, and that is a list that's very easily available. There's a wide consensus on who those people are.
Yeah.
And the other area that is really important, of course, is in fossil fuels.
Mm.
Now, that doesn't apply to us because, as far as I know, I might be wrong, there might in the past be an occasional shipment of Russian oil. It's not significant to us. In terms of trade between our two countries, it is very limited. It consists mostly of exporting relatively small quantities, I would say, of butter and lamb to Russia and buying a range of goods from them, but the trade flows are small. We could, for example, tighten up on the investment by Russians in New Zealand. That would, because there is some of that here, so that would be an important step to tighten up on.
We've seen that Fonterra, who I think their exports to Russia account for half of our exports to Russia, basically. They have said that they're not doing anything at the moment. That's their own sort of business sanction that they've brought in there. Do you expect that we'll see more in a kind of less governmental level, but more business and cultural level when it comes to sanctions towards the war that's happening?
Yes, there's a very important concept called self-sanctioning, where a company or an organization of some kind, could be cultural, whatever, decides not to continue its relationship with Russia. And we're seeing that growing very, very fast. So every day comes more and more major multinationals that are at least suspending their activities in Russia, and some are exiting. So notably Shell and BP and the two major European oil and gas companies are selling their stakes in Russian oil and gas businesses rather than just suspending operations the way the likes of McDonald's or Coca-Cola or Pepsi and the like are doing, in the hope that when some kind of normality comes back, that they would go back to Russia. But there's a big cost to them in the meantime. So, for example, McDonald's has got, I think it's something like 10,000 restaurants across Russia, which are now locked up. And so it has a cost of not operating those. But self-sanctioning is really important. Interestingly, we're seeing it very strongly in the arts and culture. I don't remember seeing something quite like this in the past. Of course, that would reflect major Russian artists being involved internationally, particularly classical musicians and the like, conductors. And so that's very interesting to see how fast that's moved on. So yes, to a lot more self-sanctioning. And I think we'll see it. To me, the most one of the most important pieces of news overnight is the Russians have admitted to using thermobaric munitions. These are absolutely barbaric forms of explosion. So it's not a contained explosion like a high explosive. It also involves an accelerant like a liquid fuel to create a huge fireball, for example, if you're using an accelerant, which sucks all the oxygen out of the air. They're also called vacuum bombs, but you can have them on grenades. You know, they've got them down to the smallest of arms. But they are very indiscriminate because they create a blast impact over a very large area, and people die from horrific injuries such as collapsed lungs and the rest. They are absolutely barbaric. And I think that this is, and they're totally indiscriminate as well. So these are hardly targeted. These are very dumb munitions. They're hardly targeted to particular strategic points. And so I think the more we see of Russia getting desperate like this, these were weapons they developed originally in Afghanistan. The U.S. has a few of them, but doesn't hardly ever uses them. This is, I think, another key turning point in this whole Russian story that is going to make Russia even more of a pariah and long-term than it already is.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Aotearoa at the moment. We saw a very, I guess, underwhelming report from the Commerce Commission into the supermarket duopoly. I think anybody who's been to the shops will know it's getting very expensive at the moment. And everyone was hoping something might come of this report. We might actually see some action. That doesn't really seem to be the case. What's your take on it?
The Commerce Commission hasn't done the big structural separation that a lot of people were hoping for as a way of trying to get a major third player into the market. So, for example, requiring the two existing chains, Woolworths and Foodstuffs, to sell some of their stores, but crucially also to separate out their retail functions from their wholesale functions in order to help build competition. I always thought that was unlikely because it would be certainly unpopular in some quarters, and so I think that had been raised by the Commerce Commission only as a way of getting more concessions out of the two major chains. So what we do have is a compulsory code of conduct by which the supermarket chains must deal with their suppliers. There's been one like that in Australia for a long time, and indeed that is very necessary because there are a lot of very small suppliers to the supermarkets, and they can have a really rough deal. They can get really beaten up. And another one is ending the practice of covenants. So if a new shopping mall is going in and one of the chains says, yep, we'll take a big area to build a supermarket there, but by the way, there needs to be a covenant that no other supermarket can come in. And that has been amazingly effective. And the chains are sitting on some large plots of land that have yet to be developed. So that's gone. So so there are some negatives, but there's a lot. This is pushing a lot more voluntary action from Foodstuffs and Woolworths. But this doesn't get away from the fact that farmers don't make a great deal of money selling their products. And at the other end, consumers, we have the fifth highest grocery prices in the OECD. You can explain a small part of that by being far away for some goods, but the fact of the matter is Woolworths, Foodstuffs South Island, Foodstuffs North Island have a return on capital of around about 12 or 13%, which is more than double what goes on in the rest of grocery retailing. So these are these have enormous power, these chains. This will chip out away at that power a bit, and we'll certainly see a bigger grocery offering from the likes of The Warehouse, which is now having a second attempt at that market, and a lot more online retailing as well, I think, of groceries.
Well, it has been, I think, part of a bigger conversation we've heard a little bit about in recent times about the cost of living in New Zealand just getting astronomical. Anybody can feel that in their lives at the moment. We heard the National Party this week, Christopher Luxon, do a speech in which he talked about rolling back all of the taxes that Labour has brought in since their time in government if they were to get elected. What do you make of this as a comment, as a suggestion that the National Party would do if they were in power?
It clearly does wonders for their core voters who really love the idea of paying less tax. It doesn't deal with, in fact, it's a big negative in dealing with all the issues that New Zealand faces. This is literally last century. This is literally pre-2000 economic policy. Luxon's speech had absolutely nothing to say about, though apparently this is coming later, but you think if they about these big issues, what we're going to do about them. And to me, one of the most remarkable things of Luxon's speech was he was trying to draw a parallel by calling Labour MPs socialists. And then later on in his speech, he was reminiscing about how when he was in business with Unilever, he always loved to get to know the consumers in the country before he got to know the staff of Unilever there. And he reminisced about sitting in a small and dimly lit apartment of a couple who were in their 40s in Moscow and understanding the sort of the privations, I guess that's probably my word rather than his, when socialists had seized, you know, squeezed all the initiative out of the economy. Well, by the time he was in Moscow, that was after communists, not socialists, had lost the plot. And it was the likes of the oligarchs and a very blistering form of capitalism was underway in Russia. And I thought that was, if that's the extent of his foreign policy knowledge, then we have a real problem. It's going to be up to the National Party to show that it is in this century, not the previous one. It is locked on to these issues we're trying to deal with. And it does have some ideas and some ambitions about how it might try to solve them.
Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Rod. It's always great to get your thoughts on what's happening in the world at the moment. Have a lovely rest of your Thursday and we'll talk to you again soon.
Fine, thanks, Rachel. See ya.
Ka kite.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.
With Rod.